It's very good afternoon. It's Niall Boylan with you for the next hour or so. Thank you for joining us, by the way. Really appreciate it. Got to say a big hi, by the way. I think it was Brian. Oh, I'm really not good with names. I do apologise. To the two lads I met yesterday, by the way, in the Omni Centre, who said they were great listeners to the show. And hope you have a good day, lads. Hope you enjoyed your lunch there yesterday, your coffee.
All
right. Lots to get to, but I'm just getting so frustrated with the political atmosphere at the moment. It is so frustrating to watch, particularly Sinn Féin. And in fairness to Ben Scallon, he did a great video there on Grip Media. I thought it was really interesting. But I had said all this already during the week. I had mentioned about Sinn Féin and the hate speech bill. And the way they're backtracking, it's beyond stupidity. It's beyond malice. As Ben rightly said, if they just had to admit it to the general election or to the electorate that they got it wrong and said, listen, we got it wrong. You were right. We're on your side. You know, people would have been a lot more forgiving. But this idea that they're trying to make it out that you're completely stupid and that you don't understand the way things work. This idea that, oh, we never backed the hate speech bill. You bloody did. You voted yes for it. Every single last one of you voted yes for it. Oh, no, but we had amendments that we wanted. Yes, you did. But your amendments, as pointed out, added extra characteristics, which made it even worse. They have lost control, Sinn Féin. Not only that, I seen a Sinn Féin member yesterday again tackling the famous question, what is a woman? They don't know. They want gender neutral pronouns being used in the health service. They refer to, you know, pregnant people and non-binary pregnant people and all this kind of carry on. One of their members in Northern Ireland wanted a guarantee of puberty blockers to be available to trans kids, where in other countries around the world they're banning them. I mean, really? They wanted you to vote yes in a referendum that they didn't agree with, allegedly? You couldn't make it up. Unless you have the IQ of a gnat, how would you not see what they're trying to do at the moment? And if they can do it that quickly and do a U-turn on everything that quickly to try and get your votes in the next general election, imagine what would happen if they get into government. They'll just U-turn back again. So please, everybody, I implore you. Of course, Sinn Féin were the party for change, party for change in their minds. They were the party for change going back 5 years ago. And people voted for them because they wanted change. As you can see, their polls are dropping faster than a Ferrari at the moment. Please, I implore you, don't just vote for a party because they tell you they're going to change. All right? Because they won't change. They'll pretend to change. That's what all these parties are doing. It's not just Sinn Féin, it's the Sock Dems, it's everybody else, it's Labour, all telling you, we didn't like the wording in the referendum. This referendum, by the way, is a pivotal moment in Irish history that we just had. 70% of the population agreed that the government are not listening to us. That should be enough. It really should be enough for you to understand what you should be doing in the next election. Now, I'm just looking at, by the way, some breaking news coming in here as well. It's quite interesting. Sean Mean, who was told he could be going to jail today in relation to his mobile home in County Tipperary, he has left Cashel District Court after the case had been adjourned until the 6th of June. Ironically, right before the day of the local elections and the European elections. This is the man, of course, who has the log cabin in his garden, and the government have told him, or the courts have told him, to take it down. We're accommodating people all over this country in cabins, log cabins, you know, porta cabins, boxes. But yet an Irish citizen is not allowed to build a log cabin in his own bloody garden. You couldn't make this shit up. This country has lost the run of itself completely. You just couldn't make it up.
Yeah.
The man alone. Just leave the man alone. Stop dragging him through the courts. No matter what the backstory is, no matter what other people have said online, I've seen some stupid stuff online. The man has a log cabin, a porta cabin, essentially, that looks nice, in his own garden, at a time when there's a housing crisis. He's not depending on the state to house him. Leave him alone. Anyway, Today's topic. Would you agree with a national DNA database? And I'm looking at a story here in the Irish Examiner. The National DNA Database assisted in almost 800 criminal investigations in 1 year, including for violent sexual crimes in 2022. The database contained more than 67,000 DNA profiles by the close of 2022, compared to 58,000 the previous year. And the oversight body for the database said the importance of the system cannot be overstated and that it's essential to the criminal justice system. The DNA database system oversight committee, chaired by the Judge Catherine A. Murphy, raised concerns about the impact of increasing demand on existing staff at Forensic Science Ireland. Judge Murphy said there are concerns about the ongoing failure to send samples to the DNA database for a small number of Garda divisions. And the report said that the number of DNA profiles on the database increased by 15% in 2022, while the number of crime stains, DNA samples taken from crime scenes and the database rose by 13%. Now, a lot of those samples they have on the DNA database, by the way, are not from people. A lot of them are from crime scenes. So they will have a DNA sample from a crime scene, but they don't have anything to match it. It said that the total of 796 investigations were assisted by DNA databases. Also, so the reason we're asking about it is, should there be a compulsory national DNA database? At birth, if DNA was taken at birth, it would eradicate probably paternity fraud, which is said to be much more common than you think it is. Today, if a woman falsely claims a man to be the father of a child, he is the victim of paternity fraud. Some might consider this as illogical or think this could never happen, that greed would take over, so to speak, and therefore the first possible reason would be for financial gain. Now, reliable statistical data on the prevalence of paternity is quite challenging to obtain. You can't really get it. But they estimate, this is quite shocking, that between 1 to 30% of disputed cases are positive. In other words, 1 to 30% of children out there may not be the father or the child of the father that they claim there it is. 1 to 30%. Now, that's quite a range, I understand. But it's quite high, isn't it? And the National DNA Database would solve this problem overnight to some degree, because it means you wouldn't have to go and, you know, do all sorts of investigations. The evidence would be there from birth. So the question is, would you agree with a compulsory DNA database at birth, that every child has their DNA taken at birth? There's arguments for and against it. Your human rights are the arguments against it. That you have a right to privacy, you should have a right to volunteer that information and not have it taken from you. The argument against your right to privacy is that, well, if you've nothing to hide, what's the problem? And it would solve so many crimes, so many rapes, murders. Would those investigations would be much quicker and much more reliable if we had a national DNA database. One particular case that I can remember off the top of my head was a very old case, which is the Kerry Babies case. And you remember, of course, they took the DNA from many people within the town. And most of that, by the way, would be even voluntary. But if we had a national DNA database, that wouldn't be necessary to do that, because we would already have everybody's DNA. And with the computers that we have nowadays, we could store the whole population's DNA on a computer, put in the DNA from the crime scene, and within seconds, you would have a match. So, do you agree with it? A national DNA database that would be compulsory. Let me know what you think. The number is 085 122 55. That's 085 122 55. Let me go to John first. John, hi, how are you?
How's it going? And well done to our friend down in Tipperary for getting the retention on his log cabin.
Yeah, 608. He's not back in court again until the 6th of June.
Yeah, apparently, he can request retention, which to me, I think they shit themselves, because there was a friend of mine down there. There was a pretty large crowd assembled outside the court, and I think a lot of people came from outside of the county as well. And I think they crapped themselves. And
John, they couldn't have put him in jail. They couldn't have, because there would have been a national outcry if they put him in jail. Can you imagine putting an Irish man in jail for having a mobile home in his garden? When I say mobile home, a log cabin in his garden. Meanwhile, we're accommodating people from all over the world in log cabins in this country with no permission from the general public.
That's exactly it. I was on Tipperary Radio this morning. I said exactly that. We're giving homes to people coming in, no planning permission, and here's an Irishman on his own ground with his own mobile home. He made a few modifications to it, right? And he's been threatened with jail. I says, where the effing hell are we going?
Yep.
And I'm glad that he now has the opportunity to reply, to request retention, and hopefully they will grant it if they have a bloody brain in their head.
Oh, they will grant it. You wait and see. They will grant it. They're not going to refuse it at this stage. Anyway, John, getting back to the National DNA Database, do you think this is a good idea?
I do, yeah, because this idea, like you mean, about privacy and everything. Now, look, when a baby comes into the world, a baby is coming in as an innocent, right? It has committed no crime. It's a blank page, right? So storing the DNA, now, if that individual, right, that's born this morning, will say how many babies and the percentage of those babies will go on to be criminals, well, they're already in the base, and it'd be a lot easier to chase them down for rape, for murder, for serious crime, whatever. And it would also finish completely this ridiculous scenario, which you've dealt with many times on your show, about paternity, about guys finding out, I mean, that they weren't the father of the children when they thought they were for years. It would end all that.
And so I'm in agreement with you, and I'm in agreement with the idea that if you've done nothing wrong, sure, you've nothing to hide. But here's the argument. The argument against it is making it compulsory takes away your rights. And takes away your right to privacy. It takes away your human right, you know, to have yourself recorded in that fashion, you know, for example, under GDPR. So, you know, there has never been an obligation or a compulsory obligation for state DNA ever in this country.
You could say, like, I mean, why do we need a birth cert? So, like, I mean, why should you allow your birth to be recorded? It's your birth. It's your child's birth. So, why should you have any documentation or need any documentation? It's your child. Why should it be recorded by the state or by anybody? So, I mean, that to me would be another example. But I don't see any problem with it, and I don't see why anyone going forward should have a problem with it, because there's been many, many, many crimes and a lot of women gone missing and everything. Sophie, it's a scandal plenty. Her murder, will it ever be solved? So, I mean, if anything would help a situation like that, and you mentioned the Kerry babies, that fiasco that went on at that stage, I mean, it would eliminate that straight away.
Oh, yeah, so they have to go around the whole village looking at asking people could they have their DNA, which was on a voluntary basis. So they had to go around and do that. And the only way the guards, from what I believe, can take your DNA without your permission, so to speak, is if they, you know, bring you to a police station and you're a suspect in a crime. Then, you know, you have an obligation to give your DNA, for example, in those situations. But they're the only circumstances. They can't just knock at your door and be asking for your DNA. Unless we had a compulsory database.
Yeah, and if you mentioned the Kerry babies, they wouldn't have to be going around, I mean, cap in hand, asking, look, will you volunteer, trying to rule out as many males in the jurisdiction as they possibly could, that would have been avoided.
Mm-hmm. Well, stay there for a second. Let me just go to Dave as well. Dave, hi, how are you?
That's a crack,
Dave. Okay, Dave, a compulsory national DNA database. Would that be a good idea?
No, maybe if it was done like the organ donation thing and it was opting, because I mean,
who's going to bother opting in? People won't bother.
Well, you know what, this is the gas thing about it. Like, I mean, you see all these like 23andMe and Ancestry.com home DNA kits, and people don't realize how 23andMe, to be fair, they don't share your results with third parties. Other companies aren't as scrupulous, and people don't really understand. Like, people worry about privacy online. You don't realize when you hand over your DNA, you're literally giving somebody else every single thing about you. You cannot get more personal than your DNA if you're genetically predisposed to cancer, heart disease, mental illness, you know. So this is one I'm really genuinely conflicted on, because, I mean, the famous case, probably the most famous case from America, is the Golden State Killer. I mean, they didn't know who he was. He left DNA at crime scenes, but they had nothing to match it against. And thanks to, you know, home DNA kits, they found a third cousin of his. They were able to build a family tree. The guy murdered 13 people and raped over 50 women. You know, so you can see there are definite net benefits.
Joseph James D'Angelo, wasn't it? That was.
Yeah, and he was a cop then, to make it worse, like, you know. Mm-hmm. But the scene in America, like, a lot of these companies will share your information with third parties, and you're seeing, like America is probably the best test case, because they're just, you know, it's a bigger sample size, so to speak. And you're finding that insurance companies are, you know, your data is being sold to insurance companies, and like, you might be predisposed to mental illness, but it might never surface. I might, you know, you could go your entire life without ever suffering from it. But it could just be on a genetic level that could be there. And people are finding it harder to either get insurance, health insurance cover, or their premiums are going through the roof.
So in other words, you're a perfectly healthy 35-year-old, but because your DNA says that you might be susceptible to some genetic disease, the insurance company won't insure you, or they'll charge you a premium rate.
Yeah, like I mean, look, I've got two parents who had cancer, so my chance of developing cancer in my life is fairly high. I could be genetically predisposed to developing cancer at some point, but then again, I might be one of those lucky few people who might go.
Would you like to know, by the way,
not get cancer?
Would you like to know?
No. I don't think so.
I would.
John, would you like to know if they had a DNA test tomorrow, and they do, by the way, if you want to go and get your DNA tested, you can, to find out if you're predisposed to anything, you know, any illnesses or genetic illnesses. Would you like to know, John?
Oh Jesus, 100%. I mean, I would, because
I'll take any time
I go to the doctor, like, I mean, I'd probably come out and the doctor probably scratch his head and say, Jesus, he knows more about medicine than I do, because I'd be such everything, and I'd question the doctor up, down, left, right, and centre.
But you see the point that Dave is making, that if there was a national DNA database, and of course third parties, we know the way things work in this country, right, and the way the world works, third parties, of course, will get their hands on that information. You'll have insurance. You'll have insurance companies turning around. You'll apply for health insurance at the age of 30, and they go, oh, no, well, it says in this you're kind of likely to get, you know, breast cancer or whatever cancer it is, you know, by the time you get to X, you know, whatever age it is, you know, so unfortunately we're going to have to, you know, charge you a little bit more, or we won't be able to insure you at all.
Well, the thing is, you see, there should be no third party get their hands on it. There's no insurance company should be allowed in the
world
of it.
They will.
But they will. But how could it happen? Like, if it's properly secured, that should not happen. It shouldn't be open to a third party.
My view on it is, like, this technology is so new. It's like the problem we have in the world now is technology is outpacing policies and laws at like breakneck speed. And I mean, like, if there were the most stringent laws that we've ever come up with in this country to deal with stuff like this, I might be like, you know, because again, I'm conflicted. I can see that the benefits are massive. I mean, look, I'm one of those people that hopes in the next 200 years, technologies like CRISPR will help us eradicate diseases like cystic fibrosis and, you know, muscular dystrophy. But just, I don't trust the state with my fucking air code right now. And I don't trust them with like my most valued piece of information, which is, people don't understand your DNA is everything about you. They really don't understand that. And I do not trust any state at all in the world with this kind of stuff. I really don't. And it's one of those things where they sell it to you.
Is that not a little bit paranoid, Dave? No, don't get me wrong. I completely agree with you that there's nothing 100% secure or safe, right? But is that, I mean, what are they really, realistically, aside from what you mentioned with the insurance companies, what else can they really do? And there's an argument there by people, well, sure, if you've done nothing wrong, what are you afraid of?
Yeah, but sure, that's also like saying if the guards knock on your front door and say, someone's been saying you've been selling drugs, can we come in and ransack your house? If you've done nothing wrong, you've nothing to be, you know, you've nothing to be worried about. Like, it's just like, it's the idea of privacy. You lose privacy. You just, and it doesn't have to be you. You can have someone else who's in the database. But you also have to realize there's also false, you can get false positives with DNA tests. You could end up in like, look,
that's quite rare. Yeah, that's, Dave, in fairness, that's really rare.
It's quite rare, but like 1-2% of people on death row are also innocent as well. So it does happen. And I mean, you could end up like being investigated for rape or murder, and it could prove, you know, it could be proven, obviously, in the end that, you know, you didn't do it. But still being accused of rape or murder, that has the potential to ruin your life. Like, I'm not against this. I'm really not truly against this, but just the proper safeguards, the proper rules, the proper legislation has to be put in place.
Hang on, Dave. Nobody is convicted of murder on DNA alone. There has to be other evidence as well. DNA, of course, assists in the crime or to, yeah, you know, but, secure but Niall, a prosecution.
Like, have you ever heard the story of the West Memphis Three? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it was very obvious that these guys were not people who killed a child, and you have DNA evidence that has exonerated people, and they're still in jail.
0.1% is, by the way, is, I'm just been told.
But the legal system is still biased as well.
Yeah, but when you work it out, right, so the false positives are 0.1%, right? But that is also based on the fact that you're a suspect. That is also based on the fact that you are one in millions of people that they've picked as being a suspect. And the possibility of you being that 0.1% when you've been picked out of a random population of 5 million people in Ireland, for example, of you being that 0.01% are probably bonkers out of this world.
Right, well, I put it right. Well, I'll put it to you this way then, right? You were saying, like, about Sinn Féin and about, like, we have politicians that can't even define
the
woman.
You have to mention
right?
the name again. I start to feel physically ill when Sinn Féin gets mentioned.
I'm just making a point here, right? Yeah. You were talking about, like, a crowd that, like, and politicians in general can't define what a woman is now. And you are trusting these people to make policies on the most, like, private piece of information that you have. I mean, the HSE is scandal after scandal after scandal after scandal. And we're saying, let's create a database with our most sacred piece of information and hand it over to them. I mean, look, if you brought it in now and it's an opt-in kind of thing, I don't have anything against that. But like to say you are signing away every bit of privacy you have on a compulsory level, that doesn't sit right with me.
Okay, we'll stay there for a second because I have a lot of people to get to today because so many people are interested in this topic today. But I want you to stay with me for a second. Let me just go to Sarah. Hi, I've been told to get two people quicker. I'm under instructions now. Sarah, hi, how are you?
How's it going, Niall?
Sorry, do you agree with it?
Yeah, I do. I don't think, I 100% agree with it. You know, it's better all around. It saves an awful lot of hassle with childbirth. And then in regards to
paternity,
crime,
like,
really...
in relation to paternity?
Yeah.
Okay.
It does, yeah. And not only that as well, like you're talking about generations, whether... you have this disease or that disease. That's good to know as well.
Is it good to know?
No, it is good to know. Like,
no, I think the only time it's good to know, Sarah, is if you get a diagnosis or if you have symptoms. So if you have symptoms of a disease and you go to hospital and they can then check to see, you know, if there's something hereditary you have or genetic that you have. But if you feel perfectly fine, would you really want to know?
Yeah, no, I have a brother that's a consultant and like on my man's side of the family, they're all prone to die early of heart attacks.
Mm.
You know, and then, like, between heart and stroke, that's exactly what he said. And that goes for all of us in the family. So but that's nice to know.
Yeah, but when you say it's nice to know, okay, some people might say, well, maybe you can take precautions. But in most illnesses, there are very few precautions you can take to stop the inevitable from happening. Like, if you're predisposed to cancer, there's not a lot you can do. Okay, you can eat healthy and all those kind of things, and that might help somewhat. But it's ultimately not going to stop you getting cancer. Or stop you from
not,
having a heart attack if it's genetic in your family.
In regards to DNA, the way I look at it is, and I know you said it there, if you've not to hide, what is the big deal? Like, everyone in this country, in this state, in Ireland, has a PRSI number. That's exactly the same thing.
It's not really exactly. You don't leave your PRSI number at the scene of a crime.
No, you don't. But, like,
but you leave your DNA.
At least you know your DNA is there. You know it's not you. You've not died.
Yeah, but I mean, you imagine now. Imagine, Sarah, and I would never want you to be in this position, but you imagine if you were attacked or raped or something like that. You know, and as you were struggling, you managed to grab hold of them or pull their hair or you scrape their body so there'd be a bit of DNA under your nails. And the guards go, okay, Sarah, let's just have a little scrape under your nails. There we go. We've got the DNA. Now we just look up the database. Yeah, there you go. It was Tom such and such. There you go. He lives around the corner. Boom. So problem solved.
Well, that's why I agree. I think you should be in the database and that's it.
Mm. See, Dave, for Sarah and for women
and not only that, like,
and victims of crime, it's a good thing, isn't it, Dave, in those situations?
No, come here. And not for 1 second do I disagree with that. And I think, I mean, look, it's an amazing piece of technology. It's not the technology I don't trust. I mean, it's like nuclear power. It can give us free, clean energy. Or we can create nuclear weapons that can, you know, cause devastation on a scale that's just you can barely even imagine. I'm not saying I don't trust the technology. And it would be a wonderful thing to have a database that if someone's attacked, you know, you literally enter the DNA into the system and you're like, well, it's this guy. Or if it's not this guy, well, we have a relative of someone here. They can do what the Golden State Killer did. But it's just this technology is so new. We don't know what the negative impacts of it can be yet. And
okay.
Like if it's like I said, if it's an opt-in process, I'm down for that. No bothers at all. But to make
well, it's already an opt-in process. If you want to, by the way, you can volunteer your DNA to the National
Database.
Yeah,
what I'm saying is, like, see, people don't realize how important your DNA is. And for the state to say we are going to compulsory, make it compulsory for everybody's DNA to be on a system, that is about as Orwellian as you can get.
But you kind of contradict yourself when you're saying technology is moving really fast and it's moving at breakneck speed. Yet DNA, you know, analysis has been around since the mid-1980s. So it's around. It's not that new. It's been around a long time. It's around since before most of us had a computer.
No, I'm not talking about like just DNA in particular. I'm talking about technology in general. I mean, we're living in the information age, and nobody ever expected 10 years ago that, you know, not only are we buying stuff from Amazon, but we have now become a commodity ourselves, our information. I mean, it's kind of boggles the mind that some people are like, well, I don't want you to know what I search up on the internet, but you can take my DNA, which is literally everything about me and so much more personal and private.
Okay, but stay there. Let me just go to Joseph as well. Joseph, hi, how are you?
You know, I think every time I'm on, I say pretty much the same thing. The government is wrong.
We say that every day, Joseph.
Yeah, there you go. So tell me this. Has the HSE or any part of the government ever been hacked? Ever had a data leak?
Yes,
had a data
break? yes oh to God. All those questions.
So could you imagine what would happen if that went on and someone decided to swap around all the DNA from all the people in the country just randomly? What would that system do then?
Yeah, but hold on. You're talking about the HSE, right? Now, if we had a national DNA database, there would have to be some element of security similar to the banks. For example, I don't think the banks are hacked on a regular basis.
They just don't admit it.
Well, maybe some information is taken, but thankfully nothing too much that we're all having our money robbed on us. But with the HSE hack, that was extremely serious. And we all know why it happened, because they were still using computers 4 years ago. There were Windows 98, for God's sake. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, the same people who made that system would be the same ones who are in charge of making this DNA database, and I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them. So that's not happening. The two arguments that came up for this system is the crime and the paternity, right? So firstly, if there's a crime case, like you said yourself, it's not going to be decided 100% on DNA. They're going to have some other evidence to go with it. So you have to have a picture of the fella, you have to have a witness testimony, you have to have all this. If you have that anyway, you can say, right, we want this fella to submit DNA. Can we check him? Boom, we got the DNA, we got the evidence.
Yes, but here's the
you
thing.
You already have that.
Yeah, but hold on. But that's not the way it works. You're making it sound very simplistic. Sometimes if they have no clue who committed a crime, be it a murder or whatever it is, the DNA will help to initially trace that suspect. Now, along with having the DNA evidence after they're arrested, then they have to come up with other evidence that to make it so it's not just circumstantial. So what I'm saying is the DNA greatly assists in a conviction.
Yeah, but it throws out the presumption of innocence for everyone else. And there could be lots of reasons where DNA does get mixed up. You know, so someone might have some DNA, you know, on their fingernails or whatever. And, you know, there was a fight, right? And one lad got stabbed, and they want to find out, okay, whose DNA is here? Then during a fight, you might pick up DNA from four,
absolutely,
or five, six different people.
Absolutely. So but and that's what I said to you. It has to go with other evidence as well. You can't just convict somebody on DNA.
Exactly. So, look, you can't forgo the presumption of innocence for everyone else. You can't say, look, we have to take it in case you commit a crime in the future. Law doesn't work that way, and it absolutely shouldn't. And no one should be taking DNA for all the same points that have been raised. The other issue is the paternity thing. And again, if there is suspicion that someone is, you know, not your child, and they're asking for child benefits, well, at that stage, you say, okay, prove it. Let's do a DNA test. You can do it at that stage.
Yeah, but you're not going to get but if you did the I'm only giving you the argument, by the way. Can I just point out, I actually agree with both of you and Dave, but I'm only giving you the argument. The argument from the other side would be that if we had a compulsory DNA sample taken at birth for every child, we wouldn't have the problem of paternity fraud. It wouldn't get that far.
But, I mean, it doesn't have to, because for the most part, you assume that the children raised by a couple are those.
Assuming. 1 to 30% aren't. So stop assuming.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so if we had a compulsory database at birth, well, then as soon as the child is born, quick sample of DNA is taken, quick sample of the mother, quick sample of the father. And from that very moment, they'll turn around and they'll say, it's not your kid.
What about the false negatives? What if it says, no, this isn't your child?
You keep going on about false negatives. They're extremely rare. They're extremely rare. False positives are extremely rare.
But they will
as well
happen if it. And again, if you're taking a million samples or however many children we have, right, or the whole population, even if it's 0.01%, that still works out to, what is it, 50,000 people or 5,000 people? I can't remember. But you'll have a huge number of people, and the data will be told, no, the child isn't yours, when it is.
Mm.
or even worse, you'll have some people who tell the other child is yours when it isn't. There, that will happen. And just when you're scaling it up to a nationwide number, you know, 5 or 6 million people, that's going to happen. We shouldn't even let that in. We should just say, look, if you assume the child is yours and you're happy to go ahead, fine. If you have suspicion, if your wife was fooling around, if whatever, then you can request one. At that stage, fine, you can go ahead with it. A father has a right to do that before he is forced to pay out anything. Done.
Okay, do me a favour, stay there a second, because lads, both of you stay there, David, and I want to come to James in a second, but just before I do that, let's just play this WhatsApp voice note as well from Jason.
Good afternoon, Noel. I think you know where I stand on this, mate. I've been banging this drum along for a long time now. I'm sorry, I think it should be mandatory. All children are DNA tested, and mother and father, and to make sure all three match before any child leaves the hospital, before any birth certs or maintenance orders or whatever orders you want are put in place, because it's a scandal. As I said, we only have to go on the word. And I know what people are going to say, how could you ask the woman you love? But if the government put it in place, you won't have to have that tricky conversation. It'll be the law.
There you go. It'll be the law. You won't have to have the awkward, tricky conversation. Let me go to James. James, hi, how are you?
Afternoon, Tim.
I'm good, James. James, should we have a national DNA database?
I think it's not about that, Noel, personally. And can I just say, Jesus, I was paranoid. I think our last two callers made me sane.
Dave is in his paranoid buzz today. Yeah, so is Joseph. Well,
you know, no, I do get some of it, Noel. I do get some of his worries. All right. No, look.
Well, I mean, what they're saying is, do you trust the government? There's a question.
No, well, like, who does? But look, if they were to do it and they were given the opportunity to do it from scratch, you know, if they said, right, from the 1st of July or 4th of January 2025, well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to record every child's DNA. Give the time, set it up properly. First of all, take it away from the HSE. Don't even let them near it. Maybe give it to a government department that has been hacked, or even, you know, at worst, give it to an outside people, someone who will deal with the security, say, for the banks, or even the people who deal with the security for the revenue. Like, the revenue have never got hacked. Some stuff like that.
And not that we know about, yeah.
Well, they'd have to, I think, by law. My understanding is if they are hacked, they have to notify you, because if you then have an issue where...
Did you get notified by did you get personally notified by the HSE going back 4 years ago when they were hacked? I didn't.
No.
I didn't?
No.
Well, okay.
No, but I've got loads of mad phone calls and...
Absolutely. And so did everybody else since then. So
I know.
I wasn't notified. Yeah, well, there you go. They don't have to notify. But they don't, not that they don't have to, but they don't.
I had got stuff from other organisations to say that.
Oh, yeah, you get them. Go to your settings. A little interesting one for people here, okay? Go to your mobile phone, go to your settings, go to your passwords, and then it'll do your Face ID, and it'll show you all your passwords for all the different websites that you're on. And have a look at every single one of them. And I guarantee at least 50% of them will tell you that your password and username has been compromised due to a hack.
Mm.
So well, most of them have been hacked. ID. Yeah.
Yeah, no. I never use Face ID now. I'm old school.
No, I'm talking about your password. The only reason I'm saying your Face ID is because it lets you see your passwords then. Yeah.
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 Yeah, well, look, let's go back to it. I think it's a good idea. But I think then what should only be used is, number one, as someone else has mentioned, you should be stipulated that cannot be sold onto a third party without your consent. And that should be the first thing. And I'm sure GDPR would cover that. And someone mentioned America. GDPR rules in America are totally different to what we have here. And if you sign up to one of these ancestry databases, you're more or less giving them permission to do it. So because they're private companies, you're giving them permission. They're not state agencies. So I think what would happen is, if you set it up, you know, they would stipulate, and, you know, they do the law properly to say, look, we're setting this up from the 1st of January 2025, 2026, wherever. Your information will not be shared with any private companies or third parties. It'll only be accessed to the health service or to the Department of Justice. And then let somebody else outside the HSE run it, because, as you said, they're still using Windows 95 in there. And then what you should stipulate then is, it should only be used for what's classified as serious crimes. Murder, rape, sexual assault, stuff like that.
And that's great. You know, and that all sounds wonderful in principle. That's how it all starts off. But then we know what happens afterwards then. Things get changed
as time goes by.
And at that point, it's too late. They already have everybody's information. In relation to hacking, by the way, now I know there's a concern around hacking, right? Hacking is only dangerous if you can change people's information. In other words, if you can go on to, say, you know, a bank and take money out of somebody's account, in other words, change the information within the system, that's the most dangerous part of hacking. You know, generally speaking, hacking is just taking people's information. There's not a lot really they can do with it. Oh, so what? I know Niall Boylan's name. I know who old he is. But it, with the DNA database, there's also a hard copy kept as well. So it would be impossible to manipulate the database. In other words, you know, to switch Dave's with yours. So if Dave committed murder, you'd be arrested, James. You, do you understand what I'm saying? So from that point of view, it's, it would be impossible to switch around the information or change the information.
Well, what you do with that situation is, if you have a hard copy of my saliva...
Because I would purposely go out and do it and get Dave into trouble just for the crack.
Yeah, well, and if I get taken to court for something serious, I could turn around and say, well, look, I think my DNA is wrong here. Bring the hard copy. It's like what they do when they take two urine samples for, if you're doing for drink driving, or two blood samples. You're given one and they take the other. So then that's how they do it. So that could be done the same. That could, if they were to do it, Niall, you know, I think...
But hang on, James, just one thing. What Dave mentioned earlier on was a good point, and is that you're saying it won't be sold to third parties, right? But I have seen time and time again where we've been told that information, that it won't be sold to third parties or it won't be given to third parties, but it is. And then they bring in emergency legislation for something like, I don't know, some new virus comes out or some high-profile person is murdered or the president is killed or something. And from that point of view, we bring in emergency legislation where it can be shared or used in a different way. And Dave said, you know, what's to stop insurance companies of the future saying, well, hold on for a second, you know, you're 30 years of age, what, you're looking for life insurance? But yeah, but you're predisposed to cancer. We can see it on your DNA. You know, what's to stop that happening in the future?
Probably nothing.
But is that really where we want to go?
Probably not.
Mm.
But, you know, that's a case of, you know, ifs and buts. We don't know whether that will happen. It's quite possible it could, but it is a case of if or buts, like, you know what I mean? But
well, hang on, Dave, that's a fair point. You know, you're talking about the ceiling falling in, really. You know what I mean? And the sky falling in, should I say. You know, that, you know, ifs and buts.
Yeah, Jesus, like we've switched places today now. But it is happening. But this is the thing. And again, I know America is a different country, different culture and all this, but like, it is happening. And like, what people don't understand is the DNA technology itself is not new, but it being a home testing kit and databases and people having access to it, that is incredibly new. And it's a potential Pandora's box. I mean, like, if I can take my tinfoil hat off here for a second and genuinely speak reasonably, say we bring in something like a database. And say it's there for 20, 30, 40 years. And we kind of get lax with it. We're like, oh, yeah, we use this now. An entire gen. Like, I mean, perfect example. My youngsters' generation, they're not really too bothered about, like, being on the internet and their information being sold to third parties because they've grown up used to that idea. Whereas the rest of us understand that that's not really a good thing. We should be allowed to be private so long as we're not breaking the law. And you would hope that there are, you know, safeguards in place that if someone is breaking the law on the internet, they can be tracked down and done for it. But you take that with DNA. And what happens in the future of, like, employers? Like, let's say if a savvy politician gets into power and, you know, he's like, the business lobbies are really, you know, going with him here. And then employers can get access to your DNA and say, sure, what am I going to hire him for? He might end up getting cancer someday and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And you could nearly end up with a two-tier society. Like, I've read enough speculative fiction where this kind of stuff, even though it seems mad to us now, introducing something like a database where everybody's DNA is on file without the proper stringent laws and legislation in place, it could potentially be a very bad thing for people in the future. Maybe not necessarily for us, but some way down the line. Because your DNA, people don't understand. Your DNA is every single last little thing about you. It is the most personal thing about you. Is your DNA. And to say that we should be compelled to give that away to the state is just bonkers to me. I mean,
do the rewards not outweigh the risks? And you're talking about the risks, obviously, right? and I understand all the risks. But the rewards are that we don't have unsolved murders, or we have certainly less of them. Unsolved murders, unsolved rapes or sexual assaults, that we don't have all of those things. And we don't have fathers going around paying for children that they don't actually own. So, you know, they're the rewards.
No, they are the rewards. And, like, I'm not totally against something like this, but to just ham-fisted go, right, DNA database without any, like, consultation with privacy advocates, without, like, proper stringent legislation, without like a proper conversation, you know, about this. I mean, this is the kind of thing to me that is like, we're going to implement it. It needs to be brought in by a referendum. Let the people have their say. And really, I'm talking like the most bulletproof legislation we've ever implemented. Remember, Les, we're also talking about a state that spent more on spin to make themselves look good than they did on their own IT infrastructure for the HSE. And look how that happened.
Okay, well, stay there for a second, James and Dave. Just let me just go to Nuala as well. She's pointing ages. Nuala, hi, how are you?
I'm good now. I did my DNA with the Ancestry.
Oh, okay.
So I find it very interesting. Now, I can see the pros and the cons of it, like, you know, and I can see the need for it.
Yeah.
But everything has a, it's like a knife, you know, you can kill somebody with a knife or you can use it to cut bread, you know. So everything has a, an upside and a downside. And, well, I say I had about 70-something. My mother was the youngest of 13, so it was about over 70 first cousins.
Right.
I couldn't track them all. But it's interesting that I have different people have come up, and I say, how in the hell is that person? Where do they come from? You know, yeah. Somebody from Brisbane in Australia.
Yeah, how do I have a cousin in Nigeria?
Yeah. Well,
I did one as well. I did one with my heritage. And I had people in Spain related to me. I had people in England, people in America, all over the world, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I came up with this guy called Lucas Povas. And I was saying, who in the hell is Lucas Povas? But it did happen that one, you know, with all the cousins, one cousin went to London in the 50s,
and got spread
somebody
seed.
Pregnant.
Yeah.
put the lad into Bethel Green orphanage, and in the 70s this man went off to Australia, and he had three different children by three different people, like
as the Irish do,
different
yeah.
names,
yeah.
And one of them was Lucas Povas, but the man kind of suffered a lot from depression because he couldn't figure out. His mother told him he was the result of somebody in the American army.
We can see the positives, and we've seen that throughout the last, particularly the last 10 years, with the likes of Ancestry, MyHeritage, all those companies, where people are able to find people related to them. And that's a kind of positive thing, right? Yeah. But you are doing that voluntarily. That's up to you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So would you believe, Nuala, do you believe it should be compulsory that people at birth should give their DNA?
Well, I think it's part of the UN policy that everybody by 2030 in the world is supposed to be able to have an ID, you know, be able to be tracked. That's policy.
Well, they did pass the EU Parliament there going back about 3 weeks ago, passed the new EU identity card, yeah, and that's going to have a lot of information on it. But I don't know if your DNA will be on it.
You see, I think maybe where DNA could be used, and I think it should be used, is people coming into the country with kids, looking for asylum, maybe, but the kids may not be theirs. There could be trafficking underage people.
And I do see all of those benefits to it. And Dave is not denying that there's lots of benefits to it, but he's also pointing out how it'll be abused.
Oh, it can, you see, everything can be abused. I think if they had the DNA in this case where Sophia Duplantier was murdered, I think they would have maybe identified whoever it was. But there was a kind of a mess up with the area or something like
We'll never know now, will we?
We'll never He's know dead. Now. But I mean, it's a good side and a bad side. And I think you have to outweigh, you know, like.
But I'm going to ask you both a question just very quickly before I move to the next caller, Nuala and Dave. Ian Bailey, do you think he did it?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, I can now officially ask that question. I couldn't before because obviously it would have been defamation. But he's dead now. He can't sue us. Do you think he did? Dave, you think he did do it, yeah? Okay, Nuala, do you think he did it?
I think he did, but I would like to see proof. I would like to have that there would be proof. I don't think it's a good idea that circumstantial evidence should be taken.
Well, I've interviewed him twice. The interview is available, by the way, on our website, nileboylan.com, and I've interviewed him twice. And as much as I believe he's an eccentric, without a shadow of a doubt, and I believe he's an attention seeker, or was an attention seeker.
Yeah.
I think to some degree enjoyed all the attention he got out of that for years, right? Because he felt it was a bit of fame. I don't know whether he did it or not.
Yeah.
I couldn't honestly say Dave guilty. I just couldn't. If I was a jury member, I couldn't say guilty.
But, like, didn't he, like, arrive on at the scene before anybody else knew about it?
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's to me, is like, well, why was he there then? How did he know?
No,
that's kind of...
Okay, there's no... there was only circumstantial evidence at the time. There was no... There was nothing to link him directly to that crime. But, but in saying that, obviously, he was the main suspect in the case. Probably because he was the oddball of the town. More so than anything. And he had one interaction with her, allegedly.
I know what it's like to be a blow into to rural Ireland as well. So, and there is, you know, that kind of, well, maybe it's the weird fellow over there. So I do know what it's like to people look at you with a bit of suspicion because you're not from the locality. So there is that. I'll give you that much.
All right, well, stay there a second. Let me just go to Maureen. Maureen, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Now, just to mention, by the way, Nuala had mentioned the EU identity card, now, which is going to be brought in. I think everybody's supposed to be having one by 2030. There's no mention of DNA, by the way, on that. I've just checked. There's no mention of DNA on that. Not yet.
But no, look, the European Court ruled 15 years ago that databases, DNA databases, were a breach of human rights. And I think, Niall, that these traitors here have enough of our business already, besides wanting DNA at birth.
Can I just mention, by the way, it wasn't these traitors that suggested it. It was just an interesting article that we'd seen in the Irish Examiner in relation to the DNA database.
Yeah, do you not think they were behind it in their NGOs? You can bet they were. Because I wouldn't trust them as far. I wouldn't trust them to stir tea. Never mind anymore.
But you can see the benefits of it as well, Maureen, can't you?
There's benefits to DNA in a murder case.
Yeah, or a rape
but
case
birth,
or whatever.
We're born free. No. DNA has to be given freely. No one has the right to take some of these DNA off from, especially like they're saying now at birth. This is ridiculous.
Mm.
This is absolutely going too far. This is bordering. Is that even bordering on tyranny? You know, this is bordering on autocracy.
Mm.
This is. And I, for one, will be having none of it.
Right. Okay, so the benefits, as far as you're concerned, don't outweigh the negatives?
No, they don't, no. No, because there's going to be more negatives attached to this coming down the track, more than we know. And they'll present themselves to when the time comes, like the ID, the digital ID, and you'll have all your medical records on it, and you'll have this on it, and you'll have your DNA on it. Don't worry, it'll all be there. But that'll come to you, see.
What actually could they, what do you think that, you know, what would be your biggest fear that they would do with your DNA?
Well, are they looking for people who've got good organs? Organ harvesting?
That's a bit far-fetched. It's a bit far-fetched,
Niall, we were talking about stuff for the past 4 or 5 years that people thought we were far-fetched and completely off our rockers. Every one of us has been proved right with what's going on today. I don't trust them 1 inch.
Okay, stay there, Maureen. Let me go to John as well. Well, hang on. Let me go to John as well. John, hi. How are you?
Noel, how are you doing?
You've heard Maureen. She doesn't trust the government. And by the way, I don't necessarily, you know, disagree with her. I don't trust them either. But, you know, it'll be used for some, you know, nefarious purposes.
I fully believe there are more positivities with this than negatives because, the whole of Europe, the whole world is in a stage of change and chaotic movement at the moment. And the fact that 8 million economic refugees are heading north, and among them will be some very nasty people, a small group, a small number already know.
Criminals, murderers, rapists,
Head
cases.
And if you're absolutely. We've had a few of them in Ireland, we already know. But if we have this, it will be a huge help to police in tracking all over Europe, because if they have Interpol and they exchange this particular DNA, I imagine it will be an enormous help in quickly solving all kinds of criminality. And the other point that lady made is a good one. The other, a few minutes ago, she, about people purporting to be related to other people who they're bringing in as their sons or daughters with them if they get asylum. They're not relations at all because they're up to every trick in the book, some of them, you know. And
So your main thing would be around immigration control?
That would be very much part of it, but crime control would be also a huge part of it, because if they're saying now we'll have 8 million a year coming into the EU, we need to be able to track all those people, no matter what countries they're in. The more help we have, the better.
So you'd be quite happy to hand up your DNA voluntarily or compulsory? You'd be quite happy for them to take a sample off you?
I think it should be compulsory, because if people are allowed to refuse, every criminal in Europe will refuse.
Just refuse. Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. It would have to be compulsory if you're going to build a database. Well, hang on. There you go, Maureen. There's a common ground between you and John. You have a problem and an issue with, you know, criminals wandering into this country unchecked and undocumented, as you've used those words before, too. So, you know, if you had a compulsory DNA database across Europe or across the world, well, then we could, you know, track everybody and find out who's a criminal and who's not.
What they're talking about is at birth, Niall.
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
Everybody's born free. No, I don't. I certainly would not agree. We know they're coming in here with nothing. They should be thrown out of the country. We know all that.
I know all that stuff. But right. what I'm saying to you is, the point he's making is, if we built a national database, no. Both at birth, and we took it off everybody, because we'd have to catch up.
If you hand up your DNA voluntarily,
yeah,
that's the last vestige of your freedom. You might as well sit inside your house from that day on out and not bother stepping outside the door.
Should be mandatory all over
tyranny.
The EU.
And if the World Health Organization treaty is signed, you'll see a lot more medical tyranny. Because all this will fall into place. All this has a purpose. This hasn't just been brought up for nothing. People need to realise this. There's a purpose behind everything that's being done.
Okay, hold on, let John respond to that. John, it's just inviting tyranny.
Yeah, well, of course, this is conspiracy theory, you know.
No, John, it's not a conspiracy theory. We had medical tyranny, remember? We had medical tyranny. People were forced to take shots. They lost their jobs. Doctors lost their jobs. Nurses lost their jobs. That was medical tyranny. And never once was the Nuremberg Code brought up in it, because they said it in the European Parliament. They deliberately ignored it.
Just to clarify, nobody was forced to take a vaccine. People were certainly coerced into taking it.
Or else they lost their jobs.
No, but hang on. That's not forcing. No, hang on. We have to clarify, you know, what's forcing and what's not. It's coercion, but it's not forcing people. It's coercion.
Coercion is the same as force.
Well, no,
there's no difference in the two words. It's the same. No, Niall, it's the same.
Okay, so to force somebody to take it means that it's mandatory.
To have a medical intervention they do not want, and it's costing their job. That was forcing them. As simple as that.
Well, we can disagree on the word.
People have forgotten it.
Okay, sorry, John. Yeah, go on.
I'm in partial agreement with you over the COVID vaccination, because most of the people that died or were badly affected were elderly people, and a lot of young people didn't even know they had it. And as you say, I'm not sure it was right to have such a mandatory thing that everybody had to have it or they'd lose their jobs. That's a difficult one, because there's things going down the line now about that vaccination, which is only beginning, long COVID.
Absolutely, Okay, we're not going to get into the COVID debate today, but I agree with both of you, by the way, in relation to there should be never any such thing as mandatory vaccinations. Although there are countries in the world that have diseases that if you visit them, you have to have the vaccinations. Anyway, that's a whole other different argument. In relation, just going back to the DNA database, John, you know, you can write Maureen off as a conspiracy theorist if you want, but you can't write me off as a conspiracy theorist. And I do have concerns about it. You know, I have concerns that it would be misused. I have concerns that your information would be used by third parties, you know, for nefarious reasons or for capital gain of some sort of description, a commercial gain.
Well, yeah, there is the point whereby we now know that certain people's DNA can tell you if you have a susceptibility to different kinds of cancers, for example.
Of course, yeah.
Or a probability.
Yeah. So what's the stop, as Dave said earlier on, that information being used by insurance companies to charge you more for your health insurance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So does that concern you, that would happen if indeed it was mandatory?
Well, you know, yeah, there's upsides and downsides. It's a difficult one. It's a difficult one. As you say, we don't want to be refused insurance when we're 20 years old because they feel by the time we're 50, we're going to get breast cancer or whatever cancer, that all the indications are that we're going to suffer one of these cancers and they don't want to know you, or else they double or treble your premium and that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, well, that certainly could be a problem, all right. Let me go to Bernie as well. Bernie, you agree with it. You think it makes sense to have this kind of database?
I do, because I just think of all the babies that were born back in the modern baby homes that, you know, they don't know, they don't have their DNA. They're having this awful issue and angst about who they are and where they came from. The other part is we send people out to New Zealand and Australia back in the last generations. And again, innocently, one of my grandchildren could meet one of their siblings or a long-lost relative they never knew anything about. And that could cause issues. They could be related and not realise it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, from my perspective, also, I don't go down the theory of diseases. Like, you're playing cat and mouse. Not everybody in your family gets the same form of cancer. You know, so everybody has a genetic predisposition to something, but we don't know what it is, and our bodies could be healthier than what our last generation of people were, you know, due to diet and whatever. So I think it is a healthy thing to look at baby to DNA us all from birth going forward, and maybe give us an option now, the people in their 60s and 70s, if we want to have our DNA restored somewhere, that we have that option, that freedom to be able to do that if we want, for our future generations. Because we've exploded, and like this, I think there's something like 70 million people of Irish descent around the world, that we don't know anything a lot about it because a lot of history wasn't recorded. But I think it's a good way of keeping our history and finding out who we really are. I can see what everybody's saying and respect what everybody else is saying that has gone ahead of me. And I do understand theories and I do understand fears. But that would have to be very well guarded and protected if we were to allow this to happen.
And I understand what Maureen is saying too, and you're saying it has to be very well guarded and protected. But realistically, we've said that in the past about many different things, that it needs to be guarded and protected, and we've seen what happened and the end result. It's not guarded and protected. It gets out, or it's sold off, or legislation has changed, and, you know, and things are used for different purposes than they were originally designed to be used for.
Definitely, maybe just have as an option. If a parent, so if we want to have this in place, we should have an option for the parent. If they want their DNA of their child recorded, they have that option, but it maybe not have it mandatory.
Well, then it's not quite the same thing, because most people won't bother. It's like, you know, kind of the opt-in system that we used to have for organ donation. Most people don't bother.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I'll give you an instance. My son met somebody on Tinder, and the first question he'd never met her, and she was living in a county that my family are from originally.
Can you send me a sample of your DNA was the first question, wasn't it?
He rang me up and he said, "Mom, have we anyone in our family with that name?" And I went, "Well, not that I know of." But I couldn't guarantee him that there wasn't some throwback to a previous generation. And
yeah,
then they got married afterwards and everything. But you know what I mean? I was kind of caught because all my family that know the history of my family are now passed on. And I'm the next guardian of the family genetics. And I have no idea.
Yeah, but even if you did, I mean, Bernie, don't mention your second name, but I know your second name, right?
Yeah,
it's not the most unique second name in the world. So what I'm saying is there's a strong possibility that somebody around there would have the same second name anyway.
Yeah, but you take it to a couple of generations back where a different name is, they've married, so the woman has married and she's now got a different name altogether. There's no guarantee that somewhere back in then DNA genetics, yeah, that we weren't related.
I mean, well, hang on, let me just put that to Maureen. Maureen, that's not a bad point, because I could have ended up, I didn't nearly, but I could have ended up with my own sister, because we were both adopted. We both ended up being adopted by people who lived in the same area. We were only a year apart in age. We had mutual friends. She went to a nightclub I worked in as a DJ. I only found this out, you know, when she was 50 years of age, when I met her for the first time. So I could have ended up with her. Whereas if we had a DNA database, I could have checked that.
You could have?
Yeah.
But by the same token, you are still infringing on people's human rights, and it's getting worse. And like I said, this will not just be just put into a database and just left there. It's going to be used for some other nefarious reasons. We know that. We've seen it happen already. So why would you do it? I mean, what more do they want off us? They don't want the skin off our back, maybe, would that suit them?
I can understand.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Maureen. I understand where you're coming from, and I do see where, you know, they can have genetic pooling where I don't want that shaped nose, I want something else that they could modify and mess around with genetics. I understand where you'd have a fear around it, but for me, I think that it shouldn't be mandatory, it should be an option at birth whether you want your child's DNA kept or not.
Well, I think that's open.
I mean, look how the world has changed, Bernie, and the way we treat people in general. And a great example of that, of course, as Maureen raised, was COVID-19. Those who decided not to get vaccinated were treated like second-class citizens. There were calls to have them arrested. There were calls by a national broadcaster, and one particular broadcaster, who referred to people as Nazis who didn't get vaccinated. There were calls, you know, to not allow them into restaurants and bars and treat them like some sort of pariah. We saw how that can work. Could you imagine in the future, Maureen's kind of thinking on this, and it's not too far off what could happen, is, oh, let's not treat them the same. Sure, they're going to die before they're 50 or 60 anyway, because have you seen their DNA? You know, their DNA says, you know, unfortunately, they're not very healthy people. Whereas these people here, these royalty here, they've great DNA. They'll live to 100. So what's the point in even giving them a job? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know, and I completely understand. But I mean, what else do we do? What else is there available? What do we do? You know, I don't understand what else we can do. I thought, for me, in my perspective, I thought it was a good idea, that it might help and assist the future generations going forward, that maybe we can eliminate some of the flaws that we all some have. You know, there's some way of curing maybe at the base of genetics.
Oh, no, I see all the positives. I do see all the positives too. And that's why I'm kind of on the fence a little bit. I also agree with Maureen as well, you know. Although a lot of what Maureen says to some people might sound like conspiracy theories, but we've seen what happened during COVID. Nothing is beyond the realms of possibility.
I mean, I don't think anybody
again, like, how could you?
Go
how
ahead,
could
Maureen.
You make mandatory a law? How could mandatory be a law?
Well, it was nearly brought in during COVID, mandatory. There was talks of mandatory vaccinations during COVID.
But mandatory doesn't the law make. The very word mandate alone means that you're given a mandate. None of us were given a mandate if we wanted these shots or not. None of us. They just threw out the word mandatory and decided it was law, which it is not. Look it up in the dictionary if they don't believe me. There was a load of shite they did. But they treated us exactly the same way as the Germans were. The Jews were treated in 1930s, Nazi Germany, and we were talking about it. Everybody laughed at us and called us this, that, and the other. And we were all off our rockers and we had our little tinfoil hats on and all the rest of it. I was refused to my daughter.
In fairness, they didn't treat you the way the Nazis treated the Jews. The Jews were put into death camps, Mom.
Yes, they did.
You weren't put into a death camp for not having a vaccine.
Now,
you were barred from a restaurant or you were barred from a church or you were barred from going to certain places. Maureen, with respect, you can't be using an analogy that the way the Nazis treated the Jews is the way you were treated.
You weren't.
You weren't put into a death camp.
Niall, what did the Jews have to do? They had to show papers, didn't they?
That's a different situation. Yeah, they had to show papers, but if they didn't have papers, they were arrested and put into death camps.
What were people doing here?
If we're going to use analogies, use fair analogies, okay?
No, Niall, that is the analogy.
I have admitted you were treated badly. I've admitted that people that weren't vaccinated should have been treated like pariahs. But you weren't treated like the Nazis treated the Jews. That's a ridiculous analogy.
No, it's not. We were attacked in shops.
There's a difference between being attacked in a shop and being put into a gas chamber.
We were verbally attacked. But the analogy was the same conception. No, Niall, it was the same conception.
Okay, let me just go. Hang on. Let me go to Stephen. Stephen, hi.
Germany.
Well, hang on. It wasn't the same. Say, Stephen, hi. How are you?
Hello, Niall.
Go ahead, Stephen. I didn't expect it to get that heated. Okay, I don't want to be given out to people. I want to be fair.
It's actually a very, very difficult one because I can really see the benefits. But my fear, real fear, is, as I think people that do fear it, is that the government will actually sell off the data and then it'll be going into, if the HSE get hold of it, they'd be looking at, yes, eradicating diseases, but that will mean actually if looking at people's DNA and saying, your child is likely to have this, so let's abort it or have no children. I mean, that's, you know, it is really genetic engineering is the ultimate thing that they can do with us. And that is actually what the Nazis were trying to do. But
depopulation.
That's what Goebbels was trying to do. But in saying that, there is already development of, and Dave mentioned CRISPR, as it's called, earlier on there, which is taking DNA strands and chromosomes and literally fixing disabilities before they're actually put back into the womb, you know, to obviously be fertilized, right?
Yeah.
So they can literally do that as we speak. Now, there's laws against it on ethical grounds all over the world, but they do have the technology already to do that. But they don't need DNA. They don't need a DNA database to do that. People would voluntarily. Let me ask you a question. And here's a fair question. If I could say to every woman in the world, if I said to every woman in the world tomorrow, before you have sex with your husband tonight, okay, you can take this pill so that if you get pregnant, your baby will be perfectly healthy. Are you telling me people wouldn't take it?
A lot of the women went, and the ones that identified women can't.
Stop out of that.
I honestly don't know. I couldn't.
Stephen, stop out of that. I can tell you now. I would argue that 99.9% of people would take it.
You definitely could be right.
I know people who are disabled saying that's fiercely insulting now. But I don't care how insulting you think it is. That's just a fact.
I don't think it's insulting. I think it's a very, very valid and.
But ethically, it's illegal. That kind of experimentation is illegal.
That's what I think. I think our problem now is ethics is actually disappearing. Morals are disappearing. So this is probably going on already, and it'll actually sort of appear. Oh yes, we're going to use it. The HSE is bought into this, or NHS, or the germ. The one thing I don't really care about taking DNA from birth. I just actually do think that sometimes a woman might want to know who the father is, or if she knows that...
She doesn't want to know who the father of the child is. What woman doesn't want to know who the father of the child is?
She doesn't want the person she's married to know the father of the child.
Well, she doesn't have any right to say that, because that's paternity fraud. So if somebody is the father of a child, he has a right to know he's a father of a child. He legally has a right to know.
But see, I don't understand, and I'll make that plainly clear.
Yeah.
Are we sort of saying then the woman has no rights to say, I don't want him to know?
Do you think the child morally has a right to know who the father is? Of course they do. I have no idea who my father is, Stephen. It's not a nice thing.
I actually know of people, because I worked in hospitals that gave their children away, and they're actually so happy that they don't know where they are and that they're in a far, far better life.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I had a good life. I had adoptive parents who raised me, and I had a really good life. But I would still like to know who my father was, but I have no idea. If there was DNA databases out there, I'd find out tomorrow.
But if they're going to do this, it has to be every country in the world.
That would be the argument. By the way, can I ask Maureen, just as a woman, Maureen?
Yeah.
If there was DNA databases and you went to a doctor and said, myself and my partner are thinking of getting pregnant, and the doctor goes, types up on the computer, oh, Maureen, I've just seen here now, your DNA is very susceptible to such and such a disability, right? But I'll tell you what, here you go. Just take a spoonful of that before you conceive and you'll be grand. It's theoretical, by the way. I'm making it up, obviously. Would you take it?
No.
You wouldn't? So you would risk having a child that would have a severe disability rather than take a tablet that would stop that from happening?
Yes, I wouldn't take it because, number one, as a Catholic, it would be flying in the face of God. No, as a Catholic, it would be flying in the face of God. No, I wouldn't. I find that hard to believe.
I'm not saying, Jesse, you're lying, by the way, but I just find it hard to believe.
No, I wouldn't.
You could argue that a doctor is intervening in the face of God when he saved somebody's life.
You could, yeah.
Yeah, because if somebody has a heart attack, are they not just meant to die? So why save them if that's flying in the face of God?
Well, I wouldn't accept, like you said, to take a spoon of anything or a pill. As the analogy that you gave, I'd say
well,
no.
Okay, so if a doctor turns around to you tomorrow and says, Maureen, I think you have some... And geez, I hope it doesn't happen to you, Maureen. But I think you have some sort of disease that's going to kill you in the next year. But I tell you what, here's a tablet. God didn't invent this tablet. Here's a tablet. You can take this and it'll save your life. Will you take the tablet?
The way the medical profession is now, I doubt it very much. I think I'd be looking on the holistic route.
Maureen.
Yes, Niall, I don't trust them as far as I could throw them. I would actually put my faith and my hands in God and leave it with him at this point because I don't trust anything now that they're
Maureen,
giving
you can't be, you have to take risks in life sometimes and you can't
no,
be thinking
I,
like that.
Oh,
I can tell you now, I take the hand off the doctor.
I'm not taking risks with the medicines okay. I bring you out today and I'll not a hope.
There's some great medicines out today. There's some bad medicines out there, Maureen. I'm not going to deny that. And absolutely the pharmaceutical companies are making trillions every single year. But there are some great medicines out there that have extended. Look at the population of the world and how much it's grown over the last 8 billion year, or 8 billion people over the last 100 years. A lot of that is to do with medication. People are living longer.
But there's some great natural medicines out there.
Absolutely. But I'm just saying to you, natural medicines have been around for thousands and thousands of years. It's in the last 100 years, medical science has come on so much that we're now living longer.
You see, Niall, looks any.
You can't,
Maureen.
You're not going to. You can't deny that, Maureen. That's true.
Any of the sciences are good, right?
Yeah.
In the right hands.
I'm not denying that. And some of the sciences are in bad hands, and I get that too. And you take your chances. But if somebody told me, here's a tablet, and it'll make you live a little bit longer because you've got some sort of disease, I'm taking the tablet, Maureen. Stay there.
Now we're into everybody's choice again, see?
Yeah, absolutely. Angela, hi. Well, hang on. Angela, hi. How are you?
I'm good. Can I ask Maureen there, does she read Telegram?
Why? What has Telegram got to do with it? Are you making out I'm wearing my tinfoil hat? No, I don't.
You don't wear Telegram? You don't
I don't
read
Telegram, no.
Okay. All right. No. That's
I downloaded Telegram about 3 years ago when it kind of got popular first. I spent about 20 minutes looking up stuff on it and I deleted it from my phone again.
It's the greatest load of conspiracy theorists and codswallop I've ever read or heard.
Nutcases on Telegram. Nutcases.
Complete nutcases, right? And it's just everything that Maureen is saying sounds like she gets a lot of it from Telegram. That's why I'm asking.
No, Andrew, I don't get a lot from Telegram. And are you calling me a nut?
Yeah.
So you think that everything because that I've said and a lot of other people have said for the past 4 years, that while you're looking, none of it came true, did it not?
I will argue on Maureen's behalf, Angela, that, you know, I spoke to a guy on the radio, a guy called Joseph, used to ring in the show all the time, still does every now and again. And he told me a lot of stuff about 12 years ago. And I used to slag him and say, go, put your tinfoil hat on you, you know, Keisha, right? And sure enough, a lot of the things that he said to me 5 years later kind of came true. And I'm going, Jesus. So I'm
not saying. But this kind of thing, Niall, that so she thinks that chemotherapy, radium, all of that shouldn't be used.
I never said that. I never want to mention chemotherapy or radium, Angela, and I have a name. I never said it.
Do you think?
I was talking about holistic, going down the natural remedies.
No, Maureen. Yeah, the natural remedies. You said you wouldn't take a pill if it would extend your life. Am I correct?
I said I wouldn't take a pill if I was told my baby would be perfect. And I did say at this point, I don't trust any one of them. I would actually be looking at the natural remedies.
I'll ask you a question. I wouldn't
trust them. I would look at natural remedies.
So do you not trust chemotherapy or radium?
No.
So you wouldn't take them either?
No. I would look at other alternatives. That's my choice to look at other alternatives.
Well, it is your choice. No, hang on, Angela, for a second. It is her choice. That's her choice.
Yeah.
It's my choice.
But I don't
agree
believe
with
a word of it.
Yeah. I don't agree with it. And, you know, I don't want to go too deeply into this conversation. Cancer is a terrible, terrible thing. Sadly.
Yes, I've had it.
Yeah, and sadly, chemotherapy is not hugely successful. it's only successful, and somebody told me before, in 3 or 4% of cases. But if you're at a point where you've been offered chemotherapy or you have to get chemotherapy, sadly, you're in a very disappointing way. And you don't have much time left, most likely. So, or you're in a very, or your diagnosis is particularly bad, right? So chemotherapy, and it depends on the type of cancer. At some cancers, it's more successful than others. And chemotherapy is very invasive. It can make you very unwell. And for a lot of people, they just can't handle chemotherapy or radiotherapy. It can be literally the death of them. But it's what they call a Hobson's choice, isn't it? You either take the chemotherapy or the radiotherapy, or unfortunately, the cancer's going to kill you. So it's the better of the two choices, the Hobson's choice, as they call it. Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. I don't want to go too much down that road today. As you get back to
let's get on to the DNA
database. Yeah, if you can, please.
Absolutely. Because I would agree with it for every child birth out there, and if only to confirm that a father is the father of the child. I am not saying to do it for anything else. I don't think Leo has given his job to go down and start selling off organs to do with this, as some people have mentioned. I can't see the government turning around and getting this so that they can use it for organ donation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it's being for. That's totally talking out through your backside and coming up with conspiracy theories. But what I will say is, and you know yourself, Niall, you spoke to a man going back not so long ago who found out that his three kids weren't his.
That's right, yeah.
You know, and that's heartbreaking. And that is heartbreaking for every single person concerned, not the wife. I don't give a continental shite about her, right? But for kids and for a husband to find out later in years that is not your child, when one test can confirm it. The way I always look at it, Niall, and come here, this is my thing. If I've nothing to hide, ask me. Take it from me, search me. You know, and I hate all this crap with, oh, it's the human rights. Oh, it's, what is, why would you care about them taking a DNA sample? You wouldn't, come here, you wouldn't care about it if it was your daughter, your son, somebody very close to you murdered, and they had that on the system, and through that system they found out who murdered them. You wouldn't give a shit about it then, would you? You'd be quite happy to have it. So why not? If this will help things, why not? That's what I want to ask.
Okay, well, hold on for a second, because I've got to go to a couple of callers just before we finish up. And just to mention, by the way, I'm reading here, based on the overall cohort that included 905 chemotherapy exposed versus 3,390 chemotherapy naive patients, overall survival rates at 18 to 30 months were 76.3% versus 69.3% and 61.6% versus 54.3%, favouring chemotherapy exposed patients. So it's not that much of a higher percentage of people who live that bit longer, between 18 and 30 months. All right. So that's quite low, to be honest with you. But in saying that, the point is, it still proves that without the chemotherapy, people would die quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's as you said, if according to Maureen, if it's God is saying this is your time, then why do they do surgeries? Why do they, you know, use defibrillators? Why do they try
and
bring people back?
I mean, look, I know all I said to Maureen was, in the last 100 years, the population has grown substantially. And the main reason for the population to grow there's many reasons, by the way. You know, we have better sanitary, we live better lives, we generally speaking eat better. Also, we have better medication, which means our lives have been extended. Antibiotics is probably the biggest discovery we've ever had in the last 100 years. Antibiotics have saved so many lives. I mean, Maureen, you can't deny, you know, that Louis Pasteur's antibiotics has saved so many lives.
I'm not denying it.
Yeah, but you are. You're kind of poo-pooing medicine completely.
I'm not denying it. I never denied it. What I'm talking about now.
We're talking about now.
Don't trust what's going on. I don't trust what they're doing.
But you take about, if you were unwell, you'd, a chest infection, you'd take an antibiotic, wouldn't you?
I would try a natural remedy first. Like I said, I prefer natural remedies.
So if you had a bad chest infection, the doctor said, Maureen, I think you've got, you're coming down with pneumonia there. Here's an antibiotic. It'll sort that out in 4 or 5 days. Are you telling me you wouldn't take it? You'd go home and eat some bananas and apples instead?
If I was sick, I would be after trying the natural remedy first, is what I said. If I had to take it, the antibiotic, I'd take the antibiotic.
Okay, well, hang on. Let me just go to Morris. Morris, hi, how are you?
I'm doing good now. I'm listening to the arguments here. I think it should be not compulsory, but if you want to introduce it, you need to go to the people and have a vote on it. Because if you bring it in compulsory, you might as well be living in North Korea, a dictatorship. Not everybody's going to agree with what you want to do, right?
Yeah.
But I'll give you one instance where DNA came into play. I'd moved into a certain part of Dublin a good few years ago, and there was a murder over the Christmas. And it was a pretty cold Christmas. And the woman that was murdered, her body wasn't found for up to 10 to 14 days. I think you remember her name, the Lord of Mercy, and Marilyn Wren.
Yeah, I do remember the story. Yeah.
Yeah, she was murdered. But what happened was the individual who murdered her and raped her never realised that his DNA sperm had frozen inside the woman's body.
Right.
And the police came into the area. Everybody stepped forward to give their DNA, like you said, for free.
Yeah, voluntarily.
And he never realised he played straight into their hands because his sample of his sperm then when you raped her was frozen inside. So there's a good case of it working.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And yeah. I think if you introduce it to the people and say, listen, it's a good thing. I had a sister who died of leukemia and I went forward to give platelets and they find matches for people around the world on bone marrow through DNA. So it's a good thing. But there is people that say, well, no, I don't want bring blood on everything about me. And like you said, many people in Ireland, men, 40% of the population don't realise that they're not the biological fathers of their children. But I'll tell you one thing now. You spoke about you'd love to know who your dad was. I think if you put your DNA in one of the banks, you'd definitely get a match. I'm sure there would be other siblings.
I already went onto My Heritage.
I know you have a sister.
Mm-hmm.
But I guarantee you, if your father went on to have half-brothers or sisters for other people, and they're up on it, you'll definitely find family.
Yeah, I must do the other one, DNA Ancestry. I haven't done that one. Yeah. I did the My Heritage one, all right.
I know somebody that went on all of them, and he's had to find them. Well, for somebody that was told he only had a sister, there's 15 other half-siblings out there.
I know. By the way, that my father, based on the My Heritage, there's a relationship with, Michael Ring?
Yes, the hurler.
There's
and there was a famous hurler as well, Christy Ring.
No, Michael Ring, the politician.
Politician, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm not directly related to him. I think he might have the same, his grandfather might have been a brother of my grandfather or something
like that. You understand. So second cousins or first cousins, something like that.
Maybe something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I always knew there was a touch of the doll off you.
But Niall, that's what I'm saying. The good outweighed the bad, as far as I'm concerned. That it is in people's interest. And the reason I'm talking about this is I know somebody, obviously not mentioning names, that they were somebody they knew was up in court for something and had to give a DNA test. And through that DNA, what's that about, Maureen? And through that DNA, they found out three other crimes that he had committed.
Excellent.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. When I said Michael Ring, I meant to say Niall Ring, actually, Councillor Niall.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Or Neil, actually. I think he refers himself as Neil. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying.
Mm.
What is so wrong? If you've nothing to hide, why are you against so much? It's like when people give out about going through airports. Oh, I'm constantly being pulled to be wanted down.
Yeah, but it was just there was stuff mentioned earlier on in the debate, and we're kind of going way into it now, but for example, and one of the ones that was mentioned by Dave at the very start was very valid, that insurance companies, for example, if they got their hands on information, could turn around and say, oh, we think you're genetically exposed to cancer, so we're going to increase your premium. And those kind of things would be affected if indeed it was ever shared.
Discriminate against you.
Absolutely. You could be discriminated against.
I do agree with, and I've said this from the start, that it is only to be kept on medical grounds.
Okay, well, look, I thank you for that. I've got to go to one more caller if I can. Karen, hi. How are you doing?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Good, Karen.
I agree with Maureen.
Oh, okay.
I do agree with Maureen. I think it'd be open to abuse. I don't think, like everything else, like all this type of legislation is always sold on the grounds of the common good. And after that, then it ends up down the road. Like a government only lasts for 5 years. So one government might, in good faith, introduce this legislation on the grounds of solving criminality or whatever the case may be. But then 5 years down the road, we change government and they have an ulterior motive. And I don't like that. So I think it's going to be overused.
But if we thought about everything or voted for everything on the grounds that, you know, the government is going to change in 5 years and maybe a conservative government will come in or a progressive government will come in, we'd never vote for anything.
I know that. But still,
so we have to trust future. I know that's hard to say in the current climate. But you're supposed to trust future governments too. That's up to the people of the future.
I think it's a complete invasion of my privacy.
Mm.
I think it's a complete invasion of my privacy. I don't like it. I mean, what happens, for example, if they take my DNA sample and then it's sold on to private research?
Yeah, but I mentioned earlier on, and I'll say this to both you and Maureen, and I hope it never happens to you, but let's say you were attacked walking home tomorrow and raped. And you know, you put up a bit of a struggle and you had a bit of DNA under your fingernails and the police took that and they put it into a computer within seconds. If they had a national database, they go and they know exactly who did it. Would that not be a good thing?
Okay. As I said to you, that's one of the grounds that'll be sold on for the common good. It'll help me if I am the case of a rape victim.
Mm.
But I think it's also open to abuse as well. If you're going to take like a population of 5 million people, we're going to take DNA samples of 5 million people to solve for many crimes.
But it's not just about solving crimes. Well, that is important, by the way, murder and rape and serious crime.
Of course.
But it's not just about that. It's about paternity. What about paternity as well? I mean, there, you know, between 1 and 30% of children out there are not, you know, the children of the fathers they claim to be from.
Yeah, but hold on one second, Highland. Why should my DNA? Why should harvest my DNA? Well, because some woman decides to wrongly accuse a man of being the father of her children.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that. Sorry, that's not my problem. I shouldn't have to hand over my DNA to solve a problem of a woman who gets impregnated by a man and then she decides, okay, sorry, it's somebody else's. And he ends up then caught up in a court case, child support and whatnot. So I'm sorry, I don't agree on the grounds of that either.
Okay, let me just ask Angela, finally on that note. Angela, in relation to paternity, Karen says she's got a point. Why is it up to her to give over her DNA just because some woman is claiming some bloke is the father of her children? It's nothing to do with her.
Nothing to do with her, but what it is it's going to be that when you, let's say, give birth to a child, the DNA is going to come from the two of you. And you want to make sure that the husband is the father. That's what it's got to be. And it sounds like more a thing of that. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm very sorry, but it's like if your husband has been playing away and his DNA comes up as the father of somebody else's, wouldn't you like to know that?
No, nothing to do with anybody else. That would be a private matter and nothing to do with anybody else. I do not believe on the ground that I should have to hand over my DNA just because someone went out and wrongly accused another man of being the father of her children. Sorry, that's not my problem.
Where are you getting wrongly accused? It's going to be DNA.
The argument is now that I've just been tuning in and listening. The argument is now, well, this will prevent women who have gone on and accused men of being the father of the children. I mean, I've seen multiple cases. One guy was a 50-year-old man, a judge. He found after 40 years of marriage that his two sons, I think, weren't his. His wife had cheated him 50 years ago or something like that. But then again, sorry, that's still not my problem. My DNA should not be harvested to solve that problem.
This may not be your problem directly or that problem, but going forward, if you had a compulsory DNA base, it would mean that every child would be DNA sampled at birth and every parent would be as well. It means it would never happen because at birth, we will find out exactly who the father of the child is. And if the dad is sitting there, you know, with his little baby in his hands and the doctor says, I'm sorry, it's not your child.
No,
and do you not believe the child has a right to know who his father or her father is?
I do. I do believe a child should know who their father is. Absolutely. I was never aware of that night. I just spoke about it.
Don't get me wrong. It doesn't define me or anything like that, but it would be nice to know. You know what I mean?
Of course, of course, of course.
Sorry, my apologies. That's what we were actually talking about when everything else came in.
Yeah.
Sorry, we kind of threw the we threw the topic in other different ways.
Yeah.
That's actually what it is that a child gets their DNA taken from both parents when the child is born, just to confirm on a father's behalf that he is the father. Because a lot of the times now, it has been proven that there are fathers raising kids that aren't theirs.
We don't know the exact figure, but experts estimate it to be 1 to 30%. Now, if it's the latter of the two, Karen, it's quite a lot. You know what
it
I mean?
It is. But at the end of the day, I'm sorry, but that falls on the women who go out and wrongly accuse these men of being the fathers of the children. That should not fall back on me or anybody else.
But
I'm sorry, I don't believe in this.
But it doesn't fall back on you right now. But what I'm saying is, going forward, if you did it at birth to everybody, the argument is that it would never happen.
Imagine giving this type of information to a government right now at the moment. Mm. When you look at all the scandals around at the moment, and you look what they're trying to ram through with the WHO pandemic treaty, they will come in and take control of our country. And you mean to tell me they won't use that database against us?
Yeah, and you know what, Angela, I'm kind of in the middle here. I'm listening to Karen, and she's right, you know, in relation to what they might use it for in the future.
And furthermore, Lyle, can I just highlight...
Just quickly, yeah, Karen, go ahead.
Virus is then also then being created to target certain DNA groups as well, and I don't like any of that either. So this is wide open to abuse. You can call me a conspiracy theorist all you want, but at the end of the day, this right now in the world we live in, when you look at the WHO, you look at the UN, you look at the WHO, you look at all of these three-letter agencies, you think they serve my interests or your interests? Absolutely not. And this database will be nothing more than a grab of our personal information, and, you know, it'll be wide open to people, especially, like maybe 30 years ago. Yeah, but look at the advancement of technology. And you mean to tell me they won't abuse this DNA samples of all of us? Sorry, I can't support it. I cannot, and again, it'll always be sold on the grounds of common good, but down the road it'll be all wide open to abuse.
Final point, Angela, quickly before I finish, Quim. Final point.
Yeah, I agree with that. As I said from the start, what I would do with it is that it is just confined to medical reasons at the moment, to just make sure that every father has a right to know if the child is his or not.
All right, thank you for that, Angela. And lots of people texting in, by the way, in relation to medications. That's another show, by the way. We might do it again. Maureen's obviously feels that she didn't want to take medication. She doesn't trust chemotherapy. She didn't trust kind of tablets or anything like that. She doesn't trust the pharmaceutical industry in general. And she would prefer to go for more natural courses of cures. But she wasn't a very famous case of Steve Jobs, when the richest man in the world, of course, was convinced that chemotherapy and radiotherapy wasn't the right thing to do when he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And he listened to, of course, some holistic person who told him to eat fruit. Sadly, his cancer didn't get cured. His tumours got bigger. And then he decided that he wanted chemotherapy and radiotherapy, but it was too late, unfortunately, for him. So, unfortunately, and as I said to you, you know, chemotherapy, radiotherapy has got better throughout the years. Unfortunately, it's not hugely successful. It's not as successful as, say, taking a paracetamol to make a headache go away. It only works for some people. It doesn't work for everybody. You have to be very reasonably healthy for it to work for you too, because it can take a lot out of you. And when you look at the statistics in relation to the overall success rate, it isn't hugely high. It is better for some cancers than it is for other cancers. But it's worth the chance, because at that point in your life when you've been diagnosed with a terminal cancer, it's really what they call a Hobson's choice. You try the chemotherapy, it may work, it may reduce the tumour, it may help you to live longer, but it may not. That's the chance you take, isn't it? It may actually make things worse, it may make your life worse, and it may kill you quicker. But that's the chance you take, because one, you're destined to die anyway if you've been given a diagnosis of a terminal cancer. Anyway. Thank you very much indeed for everybody who joined us today in relation to the database. I think I got to be honest with you, it was probably 50-50 today. I would say that half of the people today thought it was a good idea to solve murders and do away with paternity fraud and all those kind of things. And the other half said, no, they don't trust the government. And reading some of the comments, by the way, says, given that people are becoming wise to the government and their ways, why would people be stupid enough to agree with this? One thing we've learned If they say yes, we should say no, says Tina. Janet says, in a free country, there should be no medical procedure that is mandatory. Zero. Aiden on X says, everyone's DNA was collected during COVID. No, it wasn't. Aiden, I don't know where you got that from. People's DNA wasn't collected during COVID. We all decided voluntarily, if you wanted to do it, to use the COVID app. Your DNA wasn't collected. You were given an injection. I at no point during COVID-19 had a blood sample taken. Did you, Aiden? Did you have a blood sample taken during COVID? I didn't. Kevin Kavanagh on WhatsApp says they already have it with the heel prick that they do at the moment the child is born. That's not why they do the heel prick, Kevin. That's nothing to do with taking your DNA. I certainly don't agree with it. Just another source of privacy invasion. They test for one particular disease when they do the heel prick. They're not testing for everything. I swear to God, some people have some mad ideas of the world. Faye Dunn says, nothing should be compulsory or mandatory when it comes to yours or your children's bodies. Tom says, nope. Could you imagine getting hacked and you suddenly get done for a crime you never committed? How could hacking the system do you for a crime you've never committed? That doesn't make any sense. They can't change anything on it because they keep a hard copy of it as well. That's what they currently do in the national database. So they can't switch your DNA with mine, for example, to blame you for a murder I've committed. That doesn't even make any sense. And there has to be other evidence of the murder too. They don't just convict people on a DNA sample, by the way. That's not the way it's done. Anyway, thank you to everybody who got involved. Don't forget, please support the show. It's bloody hard. I'm not going to lie to you. It's hard for us to pay for this on a regular basis. We don't make money. I've stressed that to you. And I know some of you maybe don't believe us, but we don't make money. The three of us do it and we don't get paid. We don't get any money for doing it. We just do it because we love doing this. We love giving you an opportunity and we love giving you a platform. Yet I'd be lying to you if I said we didn't want to make money out of it at some point. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it. I'd love to be able to make a living out of it. I really would. But we don't. And we have just about enough to pay the bills out of the subscriptions and donations that we get every month. Just enough. On many occasions, we have to put our own hand in our pocket. And although the show has gone from strength to strength every single month, the downloads are record numbers every month. Again, pardon me. March was a record number for downloads. That doesn't really give us money. Unfortunately. Because as you can see, we don't advertise. And the reason we don't have advertisers as sponsors, we could easily get them if we wanted to. We could get a sponsor tomorrow if we wanted to. And they would pay us a couple of thousand a month probably just to have their name on the screen. But then what happens is they start to dictate what we can and can't talk about because they don't want their brand attached to certain things. And we don't want that. We've never wanted that from the start. So please support us. If you can, it would be great. It doesn't matter what you give us. It's anywhere between 5 and 5 million. Go onto our website, nileboylan.com. And like Stephen, who was on the air the other day, we've got one of these mugs to give away, which is an Niall Boylan podcast mug. Can you see that? And also it has woman, adult human female, because that's what a woman is, by the way. An adult human female. It's easy, by the way. Politicians, if you're listening, it's easy to answer that question when you're asked it. Don't do the whole... Well, you know, it can be anything they're identifying as. No, it's not. That's bollocks. A woman is a woman, an adult human female, right? Born with a vagina. Anyway, getting back to what I was saying, it's really important that you donate or subscribe to the show to help us pay those bills. We have a lot of bills every month, particularly like last month. We had huge bills last month. And there's something I need to say, by the way, which I think is very important. Whether you noticed it or not, over the weekend, the website went down. And it was going down for 3 days. And the reason it went down was we had a serious corruption, what they call a corruption, on their files, which essentially meant rebuilding the whole website because we couldn't put a backup onto the operating system. It's complicated and I can't even start to explain it to you. But it was devastating. And we worked tirelessly, the three of us, over the weekend to get the website back up. But we couldn't have done it without the help of one of our listeners. And one of our listeners came through because we happened to know that he knew some technical stuff. So we contacted him. And he worked tirelessly over the weekend to help us voluntarily, didn't charge us anything. But it did cost us a lot of money because we had to set up new hosting and all sorts of silly stuff like that. Anyway, but he helped us tirelessly over the weekend. Do you know who it was? Steve. calls into the show regularly. So thank you, Steve, for helping us out. And I think you all should thank him, because without which we probably wouldn't have a website by the end of the weekend. It was gone. It was essentially gone. But we managed to recover some of it, and from our own backup, from our own audio and video that we save on a regular basis, and all the text that we have on the website, we were able to rebuild it in a reasonably short period of time. So thank you very much indeed. It didn't affect our database, by the way, of members or subscribers, because they're kept on a separate server. So just in case you're concerned about that, it doesn't affect that at all, because we'd use a third-party company to do that. Because when you, just for people who want to know this, when you go onto our website and you subscribe or you donate, we don't get your information. We don't have your credit card numbers. We don't have your passwords. We don't have any of that information. That's a third-party company that take that information. Thank you very much indeed. Everybody, please donate. Please subscribe. It's not much money. It gets us the price of a cup of coffee. And if you all did that, we'd be in a very... If everybody listening today just gave us the price of a cup of coffee on our website or on Buy Me a Coffee, you can do it there as well. By the way, there's links on Twitter and Facebook. If you all did that, we could pay for everything and we could improve everything, and it would be great just for 1 month. Thank you very much indeed to everybody. We shall talk to you again tomorrow at 12. Until then, have a great day.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.